Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It is said that the devil himself had his hands on this building. And if you see the massive stone bridge that spans across the Danube in Regensburg and looks down into the rushing floods, you also want to believe that. With the start of the construction being in 1135, it is the oldest surviving bridge in Germany, and it is considered as a masterpiece of medieval architecture. From one end to the other, it's 308 meters, 14 round arches of varying width and span the river. In the south, behind the orange-red tower on the bridgehead, are the roofs of the old town and the silhouette on the cathedral. The north shore, on the other hand, looks very green and light. There is the municipality Stadtamhof, which is part of Regensburg since 1942. And with that, we say hello and good day to a new episode of Heirlooms, Objects from Germany. I'm Judith.
And I'm Travis. But before we get to the stone bridge in Regensburg, where Judith lives and I've been several times, we did have a podcaster write in an audio postcard for something we've been asking for in German, a German Twitter, to tell us a story in English if you're from some place that has a story. And we just covered Zipplinburg and the Zipplinburger Emperor that came from there. And it turns out one of our fellow podcasters who we've also worked with before, Judith and myself, she comes from that area. So we'll let Claudia tell us about Zipplinburg for a couple minutes here and then back to Regensburg.
Hi there, this is Claudia from the Vienna Writers Podcast, also from the Data Security and Privacy Podcast, and quite new one, the Desperate House Hackers. First thing, thank you guys very, very much for the great History of Germany podcast. Judith and you, it's really, really wonderful to hear all those stories about things we had in history. Actually, I do know Zipplinburg. I have been there once. I'm from the area. It's like, I don't know how many kilometers, but it's not that far. I'm from a small village right in the middle of Hildesheim, Goslar, Braunschweig. Göttingen isn't that far, and Hanover, it's like 50 kilometers from where my parents still live. It's a very small village, like 800 people. In a region called Vorharz. This is the Harz Mountains. Actually, from where my parents live, I can see the Brocken, more or less big mountain. Yeah, well, for Austrian people, it's like, not a big mountain at all. As I said, Vienna Writers Podcast, I'm living in Vienna now, but I come from that small village up in northern Germany. And the village is like over 1,000 years old. It's from 800 something. And we have like 7 wells in the village. So 7 places where water comes out. Yeah, out of the soil actually. And this is how the village was also called. There are 2 theories of calling the village. It's called Badikenstedt. One theory has to do with frogs, like the Patiken, which is the Pladütsch, Yeah, what's the English word for plaidage, actually? Help! The plaidage word for frogs. And the other one is Badgenstede, from Bath bathing place. Yeah, as I said, it's from 800 something, and it's a very, very nice village, yeah, at the foot of the Harz Mountains, and I really like the area. You will actually see it when you come to Potsdok. Hildesheim is not that far from there. I went to school in Hildesheim, and Hildesheim is also a very beautiful city. They made a lot of it after the war because it was very, very much bombed down at the end of the war, actually, from British and Canadian planes going there. And as far as I remember my history lessons, they actually wanted to hit Hanover, but they didn't. And so the first part of the planes flew with exploding bombs, and the next ones flew with fire bombs. And they broke out, all those medieval houses that were there in Hildesheim. When they flew with the fire bombs afterwards, the fire bombs had much more to catch and destroyed most of the city. So when I went there to school in the 1990s in Hildesheim, there were lots of 1950s, 1960s buildings. Actually, in the 90s and early 2000s, they tried to restore the medieval part of the city, parts of it, the marketplace and parts of the shopping zone. Probably we'll have a chance to go there, and it can show you a bit of it. It's I love it there, and my first book series plays there in a small chocolatry and coffee roastery that's actually placed in Hildesheim in a restored Fachwerkhaus. What's it? Timber building? Oh, help me out, please.
Yep, a timber frame house, or we might even just call it a Fachwerkhaus, or more commonly, that German style.
And yeah, that restored timber building, it's called the Upside Down Sugar Hut. Not like sugar hut, the maple syrup sugar huts, but the Zuckerhut. The things you need for Feuerzangenbowle. Yeah, it would be really nice to go there with you. I really like it there. It's still home, even if I'm living in Vienna for like 14 years now. Thank you again for the great podcast, and yeah, hope to see you at Potsdok. Have a great day over there. Bye.
I am super stoked that it looks like I will be able to go to Podstock this year and meet Claudia and Judith and a few other dozen podcasters that some of them I know pretty well, and finally get to meet them all in person, so that's great. I've only met two or three that will be there in person, so, and I know maybe 50, so that'll be really something. And we'll record more there, including a history of Germany with Judith and myself live together for also the first time. So that'll be great. Podstock is in Germany, somewhere, you know, not that far from Hanover, but out in the sticks somewhere. And then I'll be in Bremen for a week, just in case somebody lives out there and wants to say hi. But now, back to the Stone Bridge in Regensburg. At its construction, the Stone Bridge was the only bridge on the Danube between Ulm and Vienna, which are several hundred miles from each other. In Regensburg itself, it was the only bridge across the Danube for 800 years. In addition to the Regensburg Cathedral, it is the city's most important landmark and was certainly a reason for the inclusion of Regensburg in the UNESCO World Heritage List. But let's take a step back and give a little background of the time of the building of the bridge.
The place in the Danube where the stone bridge spans the river was probably already used by the Celts and the Romans as a good spot to ford the river. Charlemagne had a pontoon bridge built in 792 or so. According to other sources, a wooden bridge that did not last that long because the current and the weather continued to tear up the structure. There are no records of who was the client or now unknown master bridge builder. Potential patrons could have been the merchants of Regensburg or the Bavarian Duke Henry the Tenth, or Henry the Proud, as he's also called, or the first Hohenstaufen King, Conrad the Third, the subject of, yeah, of our last episode, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And why such a huge project, over 300 meters? Quite simply, even though you may not be able to imagine it today, Regensburg was one of the wealthiest cities in the 12th century. I say that because it's not a big, huge city today, but with about 12,000 inhabitants, at the time it was the second largest metropolis of the empire after Cologne. With her extensive palatinate, like the kind of a royal residence, she was one of the important places in the empire and a center of the Bavarian dukes. Regensburg owned its wealth to trade, kind of like the maybe rival Nuremberg, which is in a yes. You know, just in a different part of Franconia. But they manufactured like fabrics and textiles, you know, cloth and but also had like fruits and spices that were traded, and wine from that came all the way from like Venice, Constantinople. And this was all traded here, as well as raw materials from coming from the east, like Hungary, or all the way from Russia. We already mentioned briefly that in 1135, when the construction of the present bridge was started, there was a reason for this. The summer was particularly dry, and the water level of the Danube was thus pretty low.
Yes, for the construction workers, this started a race against time. The builders began quickly with the constructions of dams made of oat planks, with which kept the water away from the construction site in the middle of the riverbed. The bridge piers are made of cast-walled masonry surrounded by carved and carefully set blocks of regional green sandstone. Inside, the piers were filled with rubble. In order to protect the pillars from the violence of the water masses, so-called sanctuaries, small stone islets were built around it. An ideal place for mills and craftsmen of all kinds who took advantage of the river's water power to, for example, work wool or grind knives.
Yeah, it became an industrial... That's really interesting. I don't want to bring up the Charles Bridge in Prague, but I know much more about it. And it was built like 200 years later, but it's exactly the same idea. It's a stone bridge with arches, and it lasted. It was flooded. It was, you know, flooded many, many times, completely flooded with water going over the bridge, and it was fine. It's super solid. And it also has, if you look down... the same in Regensburg, then you can see like they built little islands or some little pillars or something to protect the actual stones from the bridge itself. So like if a log comes down the river, it'll hit the island, not the bridge.
Yes.
That's hard to, yeah. But you can still get through on a boat. Like in Prague, I've been on, wait, maybe Regensburg too, I don't remember. But on those paddle boats where you... where you pedal like a bicycle, and you can go under the Charles Bridge, and it's just really cool. And there, in Prague, there's tourists, and you know, you're like yell at them. It's fun. You can be drunk.
No, there are no paddle boats.
I don't know. No, right?
No.
Weird.
There are a lot of big ships for tourists.
Yeah, in Prague also, and they're separated. There's like a line where it's like, don't go there, you'll get killed.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah,
no,
but okay.
We don't have
yeah,
this
yeah.
in Regensburg.
Oh, yeah. Because it's neat to go under the bridge. And you know, in Prague, there's like millions of tourists. So it's like the Charles Bridge is just covered with people. And they're, you know, you yell at them and they yell at you. And you have to watch out they don't spit on you or something. But it's from the river, you notice how big the bridge is. If you're on the bridge, it's the smallest bridge in the city, kind of. But underneath it, you're like, wow, this is a, you know, this was a major construction and it's, you know, 5 stories tall or whatever it is.
Incidentally, construction was not just right in the middle of the Danube. It follows the underground conditions and takes into account the flow pattern. The pillars are unevenly thick and differently oriented. The bridge arches have different heights and widths between 10.45 meters and 16.7 meters. Yeah, really.
Uh-huh. Going with nature, kind of.
Yes.
That's really cool. Yeah, yeah.
But if you stand at the Danube and look over to the bridge, you don't really see it because it's so natural.
Yeah, I'm wondering. Yeah, because to me, it seems like the Charles Bridge is all exactly the same. But now I'm like, huh, I wonder if I just didn't notice. Maybe. But yeah, interesting. That's neat.
Maybe. Don't know. But it would make totally sense, I think.
Uh-huh. 10 meters and 16 meters is a big difference. That's, yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It took 11 years to build, meaning 1146 or so the bridge was finished. In fact, 11 years, you know, even today's planners can kind of learn something from this. Like the it's just masonry. It's before modern concrete in the High Middle Ages. So the masons and the, you know, stone cutters' original office that they used still exists today. Today, it's known to Ringsburgers and tourists, I suppose, as the historic Wurstküchel. Is it a restaurant? And in any case, it exists. Yeah, it's 850 years old. I'm trying to think if I've been there. I don't think I've. It might have been too touristy that my friends would be like, no, let's not go there. Let's go around the street to the. But now it's like family owned. The Wurstküchel. Kuchel.
Cool, I think. Yes, it's a restaurant where you get Bavarian sausages and
like sauerkraut and
sauerkraut. Yes, of course.
The Bavarian once. Sweet mustard or what's the Hausmacher Senf is the. I like the spicy one too. The Mittelschaft. Oh my god, I miss it. I got to stop talking about food. Yeah, it is. So 850 years really is kind of up there in terms of like historic, like record setting, you know, for the establishment of its kind. In fact, there's not many older. I know like Japan has a business that's, and it depends. I think it also, it might not be a record if it's not owned by the same family for that long or, you know, but it's a building selling bratwursts and, you know, for 850 years. It's your medieval McDonald's. Ringsburg is also a proud home of the Zum Goldenen M.
It's great. At Arnulf's Platz, I really like it.
It's a McDonald's, but the Ringsburger was like, no, you can't open a McDonald's in Old Town. Old Town is beautiful. It's a pedestrian zone, no cars, cobblestones. But anyways, even at the Wurstküchel, originally, it was some other fair. The actual like Bratwurst, like Bavarian sausages, they've only been selling there for like 150 or 200 years. Before that, what's boiled meat? What kind of Bavarian dish is that? Is it just like? Because even Weisswurst is. Or is it like stew and soup or just like...
Yeah, just like this, yes.
Okay. Yeah, boiled meat could be... That doesn't sound exciting. Anyways, now they have Bratwurst.
And it is said to be really good. I haven't been there.
Oh, you have? Is it? But you know what it is? Like, it's right next to the bridge?
Yeah, it's and it's a few meters to the bridge, right?
Yeah.
At the Danube, yes.
Is it a big, like, tourist trap? Like, if you go there, you can speak English because it's all the Americans saying, like, one bratwurst, please, bitte.
If you go there, you can speak English, but you can also speak German because it's a thing in Regensburg.
It is a traditional, okay.
If you live there, you should have been there once, tourist or not.
It's... Cool, yeah. So I don't like touristy place means nothing. It can be really, really good and touristy. What I don't like is I don't want to wait in lines for food. And you'll never see me, unless I'm starving and it's the only place in town at a train station, you'll never see me wait in line for a currywurst or brat. Like, it's just not going to happen. I'll go around the corner and get a different one or get a slice of pizza or something. From this culinary trip, let's kind of get back to the historic events, because seriously, it's almost lunchtime and I'm starting to get hungry here. So,
so talk about stones, or no?
Right, some rocks.
Yeah, nothing to eat, even with mustard. Yeah, so
rocks with mustard. See, I don't know if this was the Charles Bridge again. I think we did an episode on the Charles Bridge on Bohemican. You know, me and Pete.
Yeah.
But there's all these funny legends because it's not like they didn't have any concrete. So they didn't have modern concrete, but they did have mortar. And one way to make medieval mortar is using eggshells.
Okay.
Did you, I don't know if that's like common knowledge or I don't know, but in the Czech Republic,
really?
In Bohemia, they asked, so Bohemia, that was Charles IV. So 1357. 1357. That's why it's easy to remember when the Charles Bridge was built. And they asked, or they did an egg tax. They said, everybody in Bohemia, please send us, if you have so many chickens or if you have so many eggs a day, send us, you know, 20% or 10% of those eggs. And there'd be carts from all over all the villages of Czech Republic coming into Prague. And then I guess there was a lot of eggs because all they needed was the shell or maybe the egg white. I don't know. Also, but the shell, like the calcium in the shell is what they needed. And so maybe there was like lots of omelets in the decade it took to build the thing. But that was really interesting. There's also a joke saying and the joke always changes depending on where you're from. Like Regensburg, they would say, oh, and those stupid Nurnbergers. When they sent their eggs, they boiled them first, you know, and that's bad or something, you know, it's like everybody else sent raw eggs and those dumb Nurnbergers. So there's this joke and it depends on where you're from. It's like, oh, those stupid Munichites or those stupid, you know, Ulma or whatever, like those idiots sold, you know, boiled the eggs first. But the fact is that, yeah, there was some, they needed like, supposedly there's like, you know, 200,000 eggs. Or shells of 200,000 eggs in the Charles Bridge, yeah. So anyway, sorry, like tangent, but yeah, that's it's kind of interesting for those people that are actually wondering, like, well, wait, it's not, you know, it's not just rocks stacked in arches, which is also pretty solid. But yeah, they had some mortar and stuff that they mixed to get like some, you know, rock glue. So
I did know that you use egg or egg white and make some colors.
Yes.
Medieval.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Still shiny today because they use egg white. But I think also if you made a cathedral, so in this time it's like when the Gothic era, you know, Gothic architecture is coming. I believe the eggshell thing is the same mortar that you would see in the Regensburger Dom and the Notre Dame in Paris, and like it was a thing, I guess.
Yeah. Would make absolutely sense, yes.
Yes, if you got some chickens, you can make a stone bridge.
Damn it, I don't have any space.
And now we're
chicken.
Talking about food again. Ah, fail. God, I must be getting hungry. No, anyways, yeah. Okay.
You want to talk about crusades?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Okay. So...
Falafels. Oh, damn it. Okay, so I'll shut up.
Yeah. In 1147, Conrad III set off from Regensburg. We talked about this in the last episode.
Yeah.
For the Second Crusade. And as I mentioned in the last episode, he set off from Ringsburg because the new built bridge was an ideal place set off, because for 100 kilometers there was no other bridge he could use. And
I guess that really did open up trade from like east to west. We said like Hungary and Russia. But yeah, if it's hundreds of miles, I mean, so you can cross river. I mean, you can, there's boats, you know, boats exist. but of course, yeah, if there's a bridge, you can, so Munich was founded around a bridge, 200 years later, 13, whatever. Because it was a bridge on the Isar, and at first it was like a monastery and they, you know, some merchants built a bridge, and it was a toll bridge. You had to, you know, pay a couple of pfennigs or whatever it was to cross the bridge. And that,
yes,
that made so much money that they found München. And, you know, München means little monk, right? So there was just nothing. It was just a bridge and it crossed the Isar, which flows into the Danube. I don't know.
Yes.
But yeah. So yeah, yeah. So it's definitely like when you said like merchants might have been the investors, that makes total sense. That's definitely what happened. Prague, for instance, I said it was the emperor, but Munich, it was like, hey, yeah. And I believe Munich was also, it was the Duke of Bavaria. It wasn't merchants, but yeah, it makes total sense. It's strategic, for sure.
Of course, yeah. You're right. You can cross a river by boat, but as
yeah,
we
boats
said,
did exist, yeah.
boats did exist, but Conrad was on his way to Jerusalem with about 20,000
yeah.
guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and if you take them all over by boat, it would last a little longer.
Bridge,
yeah.
Please. especially because they can get some Bratwurst and everything while they're there.
Yeah,
so that's perfect.
It's a long way to Jerusalem.
Yeah, take some sausage. It's good. yeah, and in fact, this bridge has a nice story of like crusaders setting off from it. It was in like two or three episodes, we'll do Frederick the First, Barbarossa. And he kind of he does the same thing in like 40 years later, May of 1189.
Yeah.
Towards the for the Third Crusade. Now, the thing about Ringsburg is that this is, we take it for granted. Same with the Charles Bridge, is that it's 800 years old. It's super solid. but this exact same story in the Rhone Bridge in Lyon, in France. Collapsed under the joint like English-French strain of the Crusade, which is crazy. I never heard of that before. That must have been, that's like a bad omen because you're on a religious mission. But yeah, anyways, Barbarossa liked, you know, you liked this bridge being there, and he gave it some like special rights.
It's said that the bridge itself was managed by its own bridge master.
Oh, they didn't have to pay taxes or tariffs or anything to the emperor, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, that's a pretty big privilege. Sigillum Gloriosi. What is that? Seal of
Pontus,
the Glorious Bridge?
Ratipone. Okay. The bridge had his own seal to seal contracts or official documents, which makes clear that the bridge was very important, even a very short time after its construction.
That is, yeah. Considering it's in a city with a dome, like a cathedral, that's weird. Yeah. that's crazy. Okay, yeah.
It's a very interesting fact, that phone.
Yeah, so definitely, like, it's hard to overstate the, like, metropolitan nature of... So, again, just as a reminder, this made Regensburg, like, the second biggest kind of city for a while. King Philip of Swabia, who's just, you know, they're to the west of Bavaria, who's also the son of King Barbarossa, he promoted the city even further. And in gratitude of this, of, you know, him, you know, raising the status of the city further, they built a sculpture, like statues of him, the son of Barbarossa, and his wife Irene on the bridge towers. If you visit the historical museum, you can still see it there today. Those are the originals or replicas? I guess they had some originals.
In the museum.
Prague, the originals are in a museum. There's statues all over the Charles Bridge. The originals are in a museum, and the ones you see on the bridge are actually replicas. Tourists don't know that. Yeah, and Regensburg was one of the free imperial cities in the 13th century. That's, you know, part of the, you know, the emperor granted them their kind of... I'm always confused exactly what that means, to be honest, but it means they didn't have... Like Nuremberg, there was nobility of Franconia, but there was no... But they had, like, two castles. You know, there was one of the merchants, because they were a free city, and then there was one of nobility, and they kind of competed. So the merchant class was very, very strong. That's one way to think of it. But even legally, like, the emperor did grant them this, you know, the status of an imperial free city. The northern end of the bridge, there was like this bastion to, you know, protect that part of the city, and hospital grounds around that, and the state border, which I suppose was the Danube. So you'd have Bavaria on one side and this like duchy and or later electorate on the other side. I always kind of wondered why Regensburg wasn't on both sides of the city. It's really more on one side. Anyway, I mean, that kind of makes sense. Also, the Danube is huge. It's like a kilometer in width. So, but I guess, yeah, it was also like a legal, like a jurisdiction boundary too. The bridge was more than just a trade route and kind of border crossing. It, like we're trying to imply here, or, you know, say, is that it quickly became like, you know, people were drawn to it for all kinds of different reasons. And this, you know, metropolitan vibe really did kind of spread. It was like the social epicenter. There was the Katharinen Hospital, those are the hospital grounds on the north side, which was a like pilgrimage inn, which, you know, that's like very Lord of the Rings kind of, you know, you're outside of the city walls, you're on the other side of the thing. So, but in fact, so the north side of the bridge had this like pilgrimage inn and the hospital, but it was also, the hospital probably has its own weird stories because the bridge was also the site of a lot of death. The bridge itself would be the site of like court being held and the future of some, young convict or, you know, arrested person decided. Like in the 16th century, there was a death penalty, which would just be throwing you over the river or tying you up and, you know, death by drowning, throw you over the bridge into the river. This was a specific location. It's from the 13th arch from the north. So, which, yeah, you know, 13, yeah, anyways. I don't think Charles Bridge has, there's a Saint Nepomuk, who's the patron, the Catholic patron saint of bridges. He was thrown over the bridge by Hussites, so he became a martyr. But there's not a tradition of a death sentence. That's crazy.
Not really, because some people got beheaded. They put the heads on the bridge.
That's true. They did that in Charles Bridge too. That's true. Yeah.
And why did they? Because the bridge was the entrance to the city, and the people of Regensburg said, "Look what happened to you, man, if you don't behave."
Now we're all like, "Welcome, tourist center that way, Taco Bell's over there." And then it was like, "This is what happens if you attack or this is what happens if you steal." Like, this could almost be so in Prague. Let me tell you the story, and you can tell me if this sounds familiar. So the 30 Years' War, the Swedish army marched on Prague, and they barricaded Charles Bridge, and that was one of the places where they tried to stop the Swedes from crossing into Old Town, or vice versa, from Old Town into the castle. Right?
Sounds familiar, yes.
Yeah, those nasty Swedes, they're attacking all kinds of stuff, because... basically the same story happened in Regensburg.
Yeah.
So 30 Years' War, so specifically Regensburg was 1633 was when the Swedes came a-marching. I'd have to look it up for Prague, but either a year or two later or earlier, I don't know.
Yeah, it was in the 18th century when they widened the bridge to give more way for carriers and traffic to the city. they replaced the original thick side balustrades with thinner sandstone slabs. And this is what you can even say today. The ground of the bridge is really massive, and you would think the balustrades would have been as thick as the ground is, but it's in fact it's a lot thinner. Yeah. So February 1784, there was a devastating flood. The ice blast destroyed all the mills, grinding, polishing, hammer mills that settled below the bridge,
yeah,
and damaged the middle tower so much that it had to be demolished.
Yeah, wow. That's crazy. Ice, yeah, too. Yeah, anything attached, yeah, to it. But the bridge stood. That's amazing. Yeah. But anything, yeah, attached to it, whoosh, gone. Yeah. It was also the site of further wars. French Bavarian troops, 1809. And that side, so the northern tower, was badly damaged and demolished a year later. Did they rebuild that? There's still a tower on all the sides, like in the middle, south, and north?
No, there's no middle tower. And okay, there is no northern tower. There's just a... This red tower on the side, yeah, at the old town.
Okay. Prague still has all its... Yeah, or I mean, Prague only had two, not three. But yeah, they're still there. And they look super medieval and gothic. It's pretty cool. And you can go up and you have a nice view.
Then... There was done a further deconstruction to...
it was the French again. No, it wasn't. This time, there was another time...
German troops this time.
It destroyed it, but why?
Yeah.
Someone was coming. This time it was the Americans are coming. Yeah, Buckle crazy. The second, yeah, pier. So Germans, so in the German retreat, 23rd of April, 1945, that's like the very end of
World War II.
Yeah.
Yes.
Crazy. Yeah, yeah. So the, yeah, very end of the war, Americans, remember, Americans came from like Italy and Normandy. So and it took them like 4 years or a year or whatever. But at the very end of the war, like Bohemia was one of the last, because they were in Bavaria and then pockets of Austria. But from all sides, it was like Russians and Americans and everything. So Bohemia and this little corner of Germany was some of the very last. That's crazy. But yeah, in their retreat, they dynamited the second pier. So, you know, trying to collapse like a couple of the arches. Yeah.
But the Americans couldn't enter town. And today you're very welcome.
Yeah. So the Americans built a temporary, just threw some wood planks over it the next winter. And it wasn't really repaired until 1967. So that happened.
Yeah, really sad.
At least the Americans didn't destroy it. I feel good about that. Anyways. But there's a lot more about this bridge. We're not done yet. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. If we have any sponsors this round, I'll try to cut that in right here. So stick around. And real quick, before we get back to it, I'll be in Germany in a month. And for that event, I'll be in Podstock. And to see Judit and all that, we've created a couple of new designs and articles in our merch shop at podcastnickshop.com. That's a great way to support the show. Really, probably one of the best ways to support the show monetarily. And our books are there and everything. And other than that, our new show is called Past Access with Pete Coleman. You can see it on podcastnick.com. It's a YouTube show, and it's documentary quality, traveling through Dresden. Second one's Barcelona. The first episode's Dresden. And it's Pete showing us the cities and the history and, you know, culture and all that stuff. So go check that out on podcastnick.com. All right, back to it.
So we would be very happy about your feedback. What objects from German history are there that we should take a closer look at? On Twitter, you will find us at meet_Judith, and Travis is at podcastneck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. There's also at Germany Podcast and a few others, but yeah, those all work.
In the 19th century, there was going a lot on this bridge. The traffic census in 1876 showed that the bridge was used on average by about 22,138 people and 664 wagons per per day to cross the Danube. It's a huge amount of traffic, I think.
Insane, yeah.
22,000 people, and it's more than 600 wagons. It's crazy.
You know, 600, put it a different way, 664 wagons means like 1,000 horses, means like a lot of horse manure. It's gross. Yeah, anyways. I just, you know, remember that. Like, think about that. Think about that for... anyways, yeah. No, that is kind of... That's a lot of traffic, is the point. That's gross.
And that led, of course, to a lot of construction projects on the bridge. For the new tram, for example, the narrow bridge access through the only 3-meter-wide pointed arch had to be widened.
Very modern also. 1902?
Yeah.
That's one of the earlier, I would think that's one of the kind of earlier tram systems. I don't know. I don't know exactly. I don't know the history of trams. Leave me alone. I don't know. But that does sound very...
That sounds really early to me too, yeah.
Because it's right around, you know, electricity. Like, those are electrical, I believe. So, yeah, interesting. Electrical? I mean electric. Leave me alone. I'm tired. I really... It's electrical trains. Anyways, yeah. So we did mention that unfortunate event called World War II, where German troops blew it up, and then that was repaired in 1967. In the period of like the 50s, there were kind of these like temporary concrete slabs thrown up, and then in 1962 everything was kind of rearranged and reduced to the original, like the current size.
Yes.
All right, but here's the best of the podcast, because I love the legends of the... So when I was thinking, like, when you're saying the 13th arch is the site of, and you know, how they would execute people, the bridge is the guillotine of Regensburg. Like, the bridge is how you kill people. That's, to me, that's like, oh, where are the ghost stories? Where's all the crazy stories of the, you know, the last guy that was executed there and all this stuff? And it turns out the Stone Bridge of Regensburg does have a couple of stories or two.
Oh, yes, it has a lot of stories. One I learned at a city tour, because there one way to put people to death was to put them in a
cage?
Fabric.
Oh, no, in like a sack or a bag or
something. Yeah, in a bag.
Yeah.
And throw them in the river. And so they did with one woman, put her on the water, but the sack flew away and she survived in this bag. And then there she arrived on land and she cried and shouted in the sack, and some people found her and freed her. Then she went to, I think, to Austria. Got a job there, and then one day some Regensburg guys came and said, "Whoa, this woman is still alive. We put death penalty on her, and she must be killed." But in fact, she wasn't killed, because she said, "Look, God rescued me. Mm-hmm. If he would see me dead, he would have let me drown in the Danube." Mm-hmm. And so she wasn't killed a second time. Yeah, there are a lot of stories around what happened at this bridge. But I think you mean the other story with the Bruckmandel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is that one? So there's the... there was a statue called the... There is one? Okay.
Yeah. They put it back.
Yeah. That's right. So there was one. It disappeared, and recently, like 2012 or almost like December 27th, 2012.
Someone demolished the figure and put away one arm.
Yeah. So someone like stole an arm of the figure. Vandalism. So Regensburg didn't know. They filed a complaint, and you know, and then they built her a new arm, you know, repaired her arm, I guess, in the summer of 2016. the bridge is under construction, so they're not going to put her back up there.
It was under construction until very late last year. And last year, they put this this figure back to place, and it was a real big event because the people of Regensburg, they love their
Bruckmandel
bridge figure.
So what does she represent? Who is this figure? Or some?
No, it's not a saint. I think it's some folklore.
That's a crazy story. All right. Bruckmandel.
Maybe some people say it's a very capable bridge builder, but who knows?
Okay.
But we have a third story to tell about the bridge. We told at the very beginning, there's a thing with a devil involved. Would you like to tell us about the devil-y bridge?
This is a famous legendary, like, legend trope, which is regarding the construction of the bridge. The master bridge builder made a bet with the builder of the cathedral, the Regensburger Dom, of, you know, who would complete their building first. And the cathedral was kind of being done a lot faster, and the bridge builder, in his, you know, despair of like, oh no, I'm falling behind, made a deal with the devil. This is like, there's the same story of like a, you know, half dozen different places in Prague and everything, but
yes,
it's a very famous kind of like, oh no, I'm not going to be able to do it, including like the devil's Bible. It's, you know, like, oh no, I'm going to get killed if I don't finish this by morning. And so he starts praying, but instead of to God, he prays to the devil, and then the devil appears. Anyways, the deal was, he wanted to stand by his side when he got the first three souls to cross the bridge. When the builder agreed, then suddenly the bridge construction progressed very fast, and the bridge was indeed completed first. So now the devil demanded his reward, which is why the bridge builder, at the grand opening of the bridge, chased a rooster, a hen, and a dog over the bridge. So, tricking the devil. Those are the three souls he got. And in revenge, or out of anger, the devil tried to destroy the bridge, but failed. Other than maybe a couple of Nazis still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I like the story.
I get there's still a bump or something. Like there's some, you know, there's something in the bridge where they say that's what, when the devil first tried to destroy it, he couldn't destroy it, but that's why there's a bump there or something. Yeah, that's just weird. Now, the cathedral was finished in like 1273. We said the bridge was finished in like 1147 or something like that. So it's a cute story, but actually the bridge was like much faster, like 100 years quicker. So definitely probably not true.
I like the story.
I like the story.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the devil ain't real. I'm just saying the devil lives in Georgia. I don't know. Leave me alone.
In Georgia? Yeah, really? What does the devil in Georgia?
He fiddles. You don't know the song? There's a song, Devil Went Down to Georgia, to whatever. I can't sing it, man, because we got too many American listeners that are going to laugh at me. Google the devil goes down to Georgia, or what is it called?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Anyways, there's nothing to do with the bridge, so.
No, but the devil, think he does a lot of things, because there is a story about my hometown and the devil as well.
What is it?
It's the story goes old medieval time, and there was market day, and a woman was selling her apples on the market, and then the devil came his way. He wore a long coat and a hat to hide his horns. And then he went to this woman and said, oh, here, woman, I want an apple. I'm hungry. But she looked at his feet and she saw that he had only one normal food and one like an animal's.
Yeah, weird.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Feed. And so she grabbed an onion and gave it to the devil because he was so keen to have this apple, he bit in this onion and had this awful sharp taste in his mouth, and also like at his episode in Regensburg, he got very angry and he threw away the onion and went away, right, heading right to Stuttgart, because where I come from, this is not very far away from Stuttgart. It's about 20 kilometers, and he was never seen in my hometown again. And that's why the people of my hometown have like a name. They are called, it's Zwieblinger in German.
Onioners?
Onioners, yes.
Onionites? Oh, crazy. Okay.
Yes.
That's like the nickname of the Zwieblinger?
Yeah, it's okay. It's the nickname of the people in my hometown, and that's because of this story.
So you're at Zwieblinger, huh?
All right.
Crazy. And then, of course, obviously, the devil went to Stuttgart. And then he founded, you know, Mercedes-Benz a couple centuries later. And otherwise, the only thing left to say, I think, is, do you know the story of the devil in the Frauenkirche in Munich?
What did he do there?
There's a footprint in... So if you walk in the Frauenkirche, which is the big, famous, you know, two-towered church in Munich, it's on all the postcards. If you walk in the front door, one of the tiles on the floor has a footprint in it. And the legend is, and you'll also notice, of course, that if you walk around the church, it's very windy. Almost on all days, there's a healthy breeze going just around the church. And the thing is that... when the church was built, the devil came in to look at it, and he got furious at the builders because there was no shadow at all, no shade for the devil to hide, only light. In every corner, light reached. You know, it's a very bright church, whatever. And he demanded that the masons fix it or put a little nook in for him to hide. And they refused, of course. And so he got so mad, he stomped on the floor, that's where the footprint is, and left, and that's why it's windy to this day, everywhere around the fury of the devil. It is always windy, but that's just because, you know, it's thin alleyways and stuff. But yeah, it's kind of neat. I love those stories, yeah.
Yeah, and the devil is angry the whole time, I think.
He's just always so furious, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, if you wanna support the show again, remember, you can find us on Patreon. You can buy yourself a History of Germany hat. Even, I think what we're going to do is all the History of Germany and Arabic merch we sell, we'll give that money directly to Ahmad. So, you know, there's a couple of History of Germany and Arabic hats and shirts and whatever out there. And History of Germany hoodies and everything, kind of for the first time and more, so we didn't really do this before, because, yeah, I'm kind of worried about who buys my merch, but I think these are all pretty safe ones, so go treat yourself to a Pickelhaube hoodie or a History of Germany in Arabic hat or whatever, cell phone cover. Just go take a look at podcastnickshop.com, follow us on Facebook, there's a new Podcastnik Facebook page where just all the news from all the shows gets posted. But of course, there's History of Germany Facebook page, and again, at Twitter, at @meet_Judit, at Travis J. Dow, at Germany Podcast, at Podcastnik. There's just a lot of them. But we do monitor them all, and visit podcastnik.com to visit our other shows, see what else we do. There is a Podcastnik feed and new content there. There's new Bohemican stuff, and there's a whole new show called Past Access coming out very soon. By the time you hear this, it might already be out. So why don't you Google or check out podcastnik.com or check out Past Access on YouTube, which is
interesting. What is Past Access about?
So I'm really excited about what I've seen so far. I've seen a couple of trailers that are not public yet, and it is so cool. So, quick note, Past Access is live now. There's already two episodes out, one on Dresden, one on Barcelona. Go check it out. It's live right now. We recorded this a while ago. It wasn't out yet. It just quality-wise, the reason it's taken Pete like years to even get this far is that it's video. There's also going to be an audio, but the main thing will be video on YouTube. And he goes to Stockholm, he travels, he goes to wherever. But remember, for people that know the show, Pete's in a wheelchair. So this is accessibility, you know, accessible travel. And, you know, Pete's, he was on the Paralympics like fencing team or backup for the Paralympics fencing team. Like he's traveled the world. He knows all the ins and outs of like every airport from, you know, Charles de Gaulle to like Beijing and everything in between. So, you know, the ins and outs of like how to travel accessibly and what hotels to stay in and what you can do or what's a little more difficult and what you just can't do. So the fact that he's bringing this to a show, because, you know, I've traveled with Pete, we've been to castles and all this in Czech Republic, but he's really going all out. Stockholm, Kelly went to like Malta, reported some stuff, went to Morocco. So if you want to see someone that, you know, you think is like stuck in a wheelchair, ride a camel, like she's amazing. Like both of them, Pete and Kelly, are just troopers. Pete goes to Germany, goes to, you know, Frieza and Amsterdam and all these places and reports back in front of the camera and you know, shows us museums of like World War One, World War Two museums in Belgium and France, and is turning all of this. He's a traveler. Like Pete really travels, and he's turning all of this into a show. And yeah, so this is just really cool. This is a whole nother level of production. There's music and video and it's just amazing, and it's a lot of work. So we're kind of working out how to like get a season one ready and then take a break and travel some more and then do a season two. And hopefully, you know, get some actual sponsors and actual, you know, we'll send it to Netflix. Like, I don't, you know, it's just like really, really cool. So stay tuned for that. Maybe it's already there, depending on when you hear this. So check out podcastnik.com for that, or check out Pete's, you know, Pete Coleman on YouTube, or look for Bohemican or Past Access on YouTube. And news about all that stuff will definitely be on the @PodcastNik Twitter feed or the PodcastNik Facebook page. Everything we do will be on those two channels. So yeah, stay tuned for those. And that is
amazing.
Yeah, and that is Podcast NIK, just to make it just like Sputnik, but podcast. So PodcastNik. Wow, I'm exhausted from plugging my own crap. Yeah. So yeah, give us money. Give us 5-star reviews. I need to go eat lunch. I'm hungry. I wish I had a bratwurst and a whatever else we were talking about. Eggs.
Tasting
I need some
onion.
I'm gonna make some eggshell mortar and build a cathedral in my backyard. So
go
I will
for it.
Not. I was gonna say, man, you guys obviously like Walla Walla sweet onions are so good. You can just take a bite like it's an apple. I guess.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, it's delicious. Mmm. Hamburger with a Walla Walla sweet onion. Come to California, Judith. We got to go travel. Walla Walla is in Washington. Walla Walla, Washington. Walla Walla is it's an Indian tribe, I suppose. So, but anyways, come on, get over here, Bay Area, Oregon, Washington. I'll show you a Zwiebler. Zwieblerin. What was it? Zwiebler.
Walla Walla.
Zwieblinger, yeah. So Walla Wallaites are definitely Zwieblingers. Definitely.
Great.
Yeah. That's all I got. Okay. Now I'm talking, like, I got to go get some calories because I'm not going to make it.
So, bye, folks.
Cheers. Guten Appetit. Cheers. If you're me and about to eat.
Können sich eine dicke Scheibe davon abschneiden.
Ah, yeah, okay. Also was davon lernen, right? Yeah.
Richtig, genau.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, what? Können sich ein Stückchen von abschneiden? Right. Yeah. Ja, im Deutschen ist das logisch. Yeah, yeah. All right.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? the federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.